From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
This right here is the radio show and podcast for anyone who gets a pair of socks for Christmas, or a tea towel, or soap, when what they really want are fancy dice and little plastic spaceships.
Oh, yes.
This is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, straight out of Hobart, brought to you via the magic of radio and the interwebs all around the world. Hey, for free.
Yeah.
My name's Trent.
And I'm Mark.
And what are we talking about tonight? And Garth is not here
and
tonight.
And Garth's not here. Yeah. He's on holidays already, the lucky bastard. Yeah,
and I'd already forgotten that we kind of had a third person in here doing the show. Garth's out camping. He's got my copy of Hey, That's My Fish and Forbidden Island to play with his kids.
Excellent.
Good luck with that, mate.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully. Look, tonight we have got, just for a change, a jam-packed show.
Oh my God, that is a change!
Yeah, we're going to talk about the game we've been playing the last couple of weeks that I've been waiting so long to get to the table. That's the Pathfinder adventure role-playing game. I've been talking about it. We've also got my interview with one of the gaming luminaries of the 21st century, Tom Vassell. We're going to talk about what we really want for Christmas, apart from those socks and apart from those boxes of Cadbury favourites that seem to be everywhere. And we're going to have some board gaming news. All that and more tonight.
So, with Peter Jackson's final installment of The Hobbit hitting theatres very, very shortly, and maybe you've seen it already, I don't know, and, you know, it's Christmas time, and Lord of the Rings is one of the biggest gaming and nerd franchises in the world, so it just seemed kind of appropriate to play this one. This is one of Christopher Lee's little Christmas tunes. The Little Drummer Boy by Saruman. Okay, maybe that's enough of that.
Where to go from there?
Edge Radio 99.3 FM, The Dice Men Cometh. We talk nerd games and card games and tabletop gaming, and occasionally some metal, and we got Christopher Lee there, 92 he was this year, and that's his take on The Little Drummer Boy.
Now, look, I saw this on the Facebooks, and I thought it was a joke.
No, he's 100% serious.
Really?
Yeah, he's Christopher Lee, Saruman, is a devout metalhead,
yeah.
And has put out a bunch of EPs, and I think the latest one, not sure if that one's from it, it's called Darkest Carols. Faithful Sing.
Rock on, Saruman.
Are you going to go see The Hobbit, the third
part? Oh, yes, I must. Yeah. I mean, look, it's so overblown and it's so bloated now. It broke my heart when I saw The Hobbit because it turned a beloved childhood story for me into this overblown, massive thing. I mean, yeah, look, it's still a great story. I love Thorin Oakenshield. I love that actor, I can't remember his name, but you know, I loved him from Spooks, and it's a great story. It's just not The Hobbit for me. It's
exactly
a totally different story.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's not The Hobbit, but it'll do.
Yeah,
if I get to wallow in the, you know, Peter Jackson Middle Earth again for a little while, then it'll do.
Yeah, yeah. And look, Martin Freeman, you know, from The Office, I've loved him. I've loved him in Sherlock.
What a career that guy's... Because he's Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah.
He's Arthur Dent.
Yeah.
Right? He's Dr.
That's
Watson.
Right. Yes.
All right? I mean, there's three massively iconic characters
Office.
Yeah, of course. And Fargo lately as well.
Yeah.
Amazing career.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
And some great games spinning off out of Lord of the Rings in all sorts of different areas. Like card games, miniature games. Battle of the Five Armies is this whole monster game that came out a couple of months ago.
Or even back to when we spoke to Martin Wallace at our panel in PAX, and the first ever game he designed was a Lord of the Rings game in German, released only in the German market.
There's been so many of them over the years, before they were films, of course.
And we're talking about epic storylines, epic events.
Oh, this is your attempt to segue into
what
you've been playing.
This is my segue into the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game Rise of the Rune Lords base set.
Look at you. You're so excited. We've been talking about this card game for months because you spent How much?
Too much.
On a box full of...
A box full of air.
And yeah. It was just empty receptacles for booster packs that you essentially have to buy.
Yeah,
you...
well, look, let's set it up. Mm. So Paizo, the amazing role-playing company that did so much to jump in, basically capture the adventure, fantasy role-playing market over from D&D when D&D sort of dropped the ball after... 3.5, and they had this very, very successful Pathfinder role-playing system. So they've taken one of their, I believe it's one of their best-known story arcs, The Rise of the Rune Lords.
It was their first one, I believe.
Yeah, and they've created this adventure card game system now. Mike Salinka is the lead designer, and there's a whole bunch of other designers. And what they had claimed was basically to give you a role-playing experience in a board game, in a box.
Mm.
So trying to recapture that feel. So when you get the base game as I did, and the reason why we talk about it being a box of air is because it's a really large box. It's much bigger than your standard sort of Ticket to Ride box. And in it came probably a couple of hundred cards. One, the first of the expansions, so there's six expansions. The first one actually came in the box, in a little box within a box. But basically there was a huge amount of space in this box. So these expansions, the adventure decks they're called, they're usually retailing around about, you know, the $30 mark, plus or minus, depending where you get it from. And so the first one came, there's another five. So that's $150 on top of the original game, which was about, you know, $70 or $80. So let's not add that up. Then, of course, you had the character add-on deck, which enabled you to take from four players to six players.
Which wasn't an essential purchase.
Correct. And now they've introduced these character decks. So there's, I think, six character decks for the sort of the base types of characters. So wizards, sorcerers, rogues, fighters, a couple of others. So you can, it just gives you more cards, more character options. Now, they have also started doing this organized play system, a bit like the D&D have the organized play system with this card game. Now, I don't know if it's... If
you mean like any, tournaments, yeah? Yeah,
well, no, where you go along week after week and you play your same character in a scenario.
Okay.
And I believe the stores get the scenario packs. And the idea is of these character packs is you could take your, buy just a character pack and then go and play in your local store's organised play tournament, not having to have the base game. So the store would have the base game, and you would just have your character from this character pack. So
and there'd be some kind of entry fee.
Yeah, yeah, and that, look, that's an interesting concept. But then it also just adds more cards to your base game. They have now released a second base game with a totally different story arc in a piratey world called Skulls and Shackles. I think the first couple of the adventure decks are out for that. So it's and it's the same model, so it's going to be six adventure decks. It's going to be $100.
Another 500, 600, 700, 800 cards. I don't know how many of there are.
Yeah, to do that. Yeah. So that's the system. That's how it works.
That's what we've been playing. Yeah. You and I have given it two goes with a couple of other mates of ours. And, you know, we talk about it offering a light role-playing game experience. Your take on how this fares? You seem to enjoy yourself?
Yeah, so look, I mean, I have been enjoying it. So sad to admit that I have played through a few scenarios by myself. Because there were three introductory scenarios before you get into the first adventure set.
Poor little Mark pretending to be a wizard at home on his own.
So, but the good thing was I sort of played through with four characters to get them set up and get them to go into the first proper adventure so the four of us could play it. And now that we've played the first three scenarios in the adventure deck, which you and I have played two and then I played one by myself in between times. Anyway, I'm starting to get the feel of character development. Because, yes, you only have your deck of 15 cards as your character, but because during these adventures you're finding new stuff, at the end of each adventure you basically get an opportunity to rebuild your deck. You can share stuff between characters. You rebuild your 15 cards, but of course you find better stuff. So just like in a real RPG or in a great computer game where you're finding new gear all the time and chucking away the old gear.
All the characters retire off to the inn, they swap cards amongst each other and then they go back.
I am getting this feel of character development. I am getting this feel of what the individuals are good at, what they're not good at, who they work well with, who they don't work well with, what sort of locations they should go to and where they shouldn't go. So I am getting this development now. Having said that,
is it worth the $400 that you spent on it?
It's not quite $400. Maybe it's $250. I don't know. Look, we worked out last night that if you play through this whole thing, there's 33 games, effectively 33 scenarios.
If you want to play each one just once,
yeah,
and presumably, you know, assuming you do it successfully,
yeah, and you
because know, you can die.
That's exactly right. Yeah. But you can bring in new characters. There are rules for that, and each of these adventures is taking probably 90 minutes to 2 hours. So, I mean, there's a buttload of gaming in this.
And we have to think about this because we asked ourselves, when was the last time we played any game 30 times, particularly lately, with so many titles coming out? So
probably the answer would be never.
Yeah, it's a lot of gaming in this box.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I'm going to get 30-odd games in my however many dollars.
Well, if you could find anyone else to keep playing it with, mate, because I have to frankly tell you, it didn't really set me on fire.
Yeah, okay. I could tell.
Yeah.
Because I kept having to wake you up.
I found it a little just mechanical. Yeah. And it's saying, right, here's a role-playing game in a card game in a box. But, of course, the role-playing game experience is that it's a wide-open world and you can do whatever you want. And I didn't find it to be that at all. In fact, there's a stunning lack of choice in the game.
Yes.
You've got your choice essentially, okay, here are six different locations that I can go to. Each one has a deck, and I'm going to flip the top card of that and fight whatever it is or pick up the monster or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you're right. And it is linear in that way. And clearly, the thing that we all love about role-playing is the storytelling. Now, yes, these cards have flavor text. Yes, all the locations have flavor text. The adventures have flavor text. There's a reason you're doing this. But you're right. Essentially, you're just sort of going step one, then step two, then step three, then step four. There is no story that you're telling, and there is no room for the story to deviate.
What I do like is that you get to build big pools of dice, massive fistfuls of dice to roll, although the mechanic for doing that is, frankly, just a little bit clunky. And the artwork around Pathfinder has always been one of the big selling points of it for me, and they've got a chance to repurpose the artwork from the rule books into the cards. But having said that, I actually find the cards a little bit boring to look at. They could be doing a lot more with this.
I think
a little bit bland.
Part of the problem is because there's so much text on
the
cards.
That's true, yeah.
And I guess like any of these card games where the game is on the cards, you've got to have that level of text. But then what you find, you might remember, I actually had like a stiff neck because I spent the whole night sort of craned over the table reading, because you're constantly reading the text on every card. You can't sort of take a breath. And particularly because you struggled with it a bit, with the mechanics. So I was helping you along. I was reading your cards. So it's like I just was reading cards non-stop for 2 hours. Look, I'm still having fun with it. I'm probably going to play some more of it by myself because when I'm sitting at home with nothing to do, it's probably better than dying and, you know, spending my hours and hours in Skyrim. But
it's better than watching The Bachelor.
Yes, definitely.
And that's about the best thing I can say for Pathfinder, the adventure card game. Okay. No, look, I'll play it with you again, all right? Because it breaks my little heart to think of you just there on your own pretending to be a wizard at home.
Yeah, look, the thing is, and someone said I'd rather play a role-playing game, you know, when we asked him to come along and play. So would I, absolutely. but there are times you just can't get a role-playing group up and running. So I guess it can fill that niche and you don't need a DM.
Coming up next on The Dice Man Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Mark Rickards interviews Tom Vassell. He is a huge figure in our hobby, and we'll find out a little bit about why and how next.
That was Sounds Like Sunset with Open Up My Eyes. You're with The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and look, there are two people in the board gaming world that I really wanted to interview. One of them is, of course, Will Wheaton. And since the restraining order, I can't really go near him. But the one that I could is Tom Vassell. And so I was quite happy to be up at midnight interviewing him.
All right, let's have a listen.
So here I am. It's midnight in Australia. And I'm sitting here with a blanket over my head in front of my computer. I don't do that for everyone. But tonight I'm doing it for the evil overlord of the Dice Tower Empire, Mr. Tom, or should I call him Darth, Vassell. Tom, how are you going?
I think I'm going good, but apparently I'm evil now.
Look, I just thought your empire is growing so much that Darth Vassal was a title that really fitted.
I'm looking more for either Czar or Moff.
10 years ago, you started a little podcast called The Dice Tower. In fact, it didn't even have a name at the start, I remember. You ran a little competition. Did you ever imagine that 10 years later, it would still be going?
Well, I always imagine these things, but not realistically. You know, I sit around and think, okay, what would I do if someone walked up? You know, I'm walking down the street, and I'm always hoping that Bill Gates, like, runs me over. And I survive, of course, but then he gives me enough money that I can do whatever I want. That's my goal.
Okay.
And so I would imagine, oh, okay, maybe I could do the Dice Tower full time if I got $1 million, and I would hire all these people to work for me. So one of those things happened. Still haven't been able to hire all these people to work for me, but it is pretty amazing to look back.
I bet you wish you took out a patent on board game podcasting.
Well, maybe. I wasn't the first, for sure. There was two podcasts before me, the Geek Speak and Mark Johnson's podcast. And there was a couple podcasts that started very close to when we started. But for the most part, yeah, the field is pretty crowded today for sure.
Yeah, look, they've just gone berserk. And obviously, you know, we're just another one of the pale imitators. Are you threatened by the presence of another podcast with dice in the name? I mean, it's not like there's many of those.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the Dice Men Cometh, I don't even know what that means. When I hear it, it makes me think of, I don't know, it makes me think it's like the name of a song,
yeah,
like a dark song sung by guys with guitars and screaming eyes and chickens in the background, the Dice Men Cometh.
Trent will be very happy. Now, nothing personal. Now, obviously, you co-designed that with Steve Avery, and if you've ever listened to any of our shows, you will know it is one of our favorites. You've tasted success as a game designer, but I understand now you've gone into the realm of publishing.
First of all, I would argue that I haven't tasted success. I think there's probably less than 5,000 that have been sold. But, you know, I mean, I guess it's – in the board game world, that is a success. And I'm not actually in publishing. I'm in – oh, consulting might be the best word for it. Arcane Wonders is actually doing the publishing. I just kind of work with them, and I get to pick games that are in a line. It's actually pretty cool because I get to pick these games. Now, there's a longer process, and I'll tell you, it can be very stressful because I want this game, this line to have, it's, by the way, to clarify, it's the Dice Tower Essentials line.
Yes, yeah.
That Arcane Wonders is publishing. And I want this line to have the best games or really good games. I can't get the best, obviously, because every publisher is publishing great games. So I can't steal them from other publishers. So I'm looking for new games or games that are older games that need to be reprinted. So the first one is an older game that's been reprinted and redone called Sheriff of Nottingham. That one has been a success, a smashing success. I mean, it sold out of the first two print runs, and the third print run, I believe, is practically sold out too. And, you know, hunting down these other games, trying to find cool games that are not just good, but great. Great games. That's the tough thing, because if I want to publish or help, you know, Arcane Wonders publish just good games, that would be easy. There are a dime a dozen to get good games these days. But I want great games, games that people say, wow, that was really good.
These are games that every gamer should have in their collection. Is that right?
Yes, although, you know, if we ever do get to like 30 or 40 games, maybe the name won't be quite so true. Because I don't think everyone needs a pile of games. You just need a few games that you really like. To swing that back full circle, when we design Nothing Personal, we weren't designing a game for the masses. We were designing a game that we knew a lot of people would hate. But we wanted some people to really like it. I wanted some people to say, this is my favorite game. That was more important to me than designing a game that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people liked.
I'd say it's only just been dethroned with our gaming group, unfortunately, by Dead of Winter.
Well, Dead of Winter is an excellent game, so cannot complain there.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you have any games you can tease us about that are coming soon in the Dice Tower Essentials line?
Well, I can tell you the next one is called the City of Gears. It's a 2-to-4-player game in which it's a light Euro game in which you're moving these people into this city and trying to take over different sections of that city. And you do so each turn by rolling dice and using the actions that you have on these dice. Several of these actions include pulling gears from a bag, and these gears can be put connecting tiles together so that you can move around and control different parts of the board, or you can flip the gear over and upgrade one of your abilities. Like, instead of drawing two dice every turn, you're now drawing, you're rolling three dice. Or you might roll four dice or three dice, and you get to re-roll one of them. You might be able to take, and the game has a very heavy take that element where you can take out other people and blow up their gears and things like that with bombs. Sabotage, of course, that's legitimate and something I like to promote. And it, so it could be pretty mean, and it works really well as a 2, 3, and 4 player game. That you'll see early in 2015. It's pretty much finished design-wise at this point, just working on components and printing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we have another game, and unfortunately, I can't tell you much more about it because the details are not yet finalized. But there, but suffice it to say, it is neither a Euro game nor an Amerithrash game. Mm. So that's one of the things I like is that I want to have games from different genres and different aspects. I'm not just one kind of guy. And then we have a couple others that are kind of possibilities. So working on those.
And you're not just looking at new games. You're looking at reprints as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, but it depends. I mean, here's the thing. A lot of people don't realize. They'll say, oh, I love this game. I really want one, and it's really hard to find. It's $90, $100. Well, I guess down in Australia, that's typical prices for you.
yes.
I know it's tough down there, and yeah. I feel for you. When I used to live in Korea, same problem. Okay, so we'll say $200 for this game.
Yes.
Oh, it's so hard to find. Oh, you know, they should reprint it. The problem is the game is out of print usually for a reason.
Mm.
And one, that reason is it doesn't sell that often. And yes, there are people who are willing to pay $200 for it, but that might be at the most a couple hundred people who are willing to do that. And you want a game to sell 5,000, 10,000 copies. So you might reprint the game, and it doesn't do that well. If you'll notice, many of the reprints that Fantasy Flight and other companies do, they do a reprint, and then that's it. Fortress America, for example, is on the Fantasy Flight Christmas sale this year.
Yes.
Because it just isn't selling that much anymore, which is unfortunate. It's a good game, but the market has been saturated. So when I'm looking at reprints, I have to think, is there already a lot of those games out there? I found some excellent games before. There was one game I wanted to put in the line, but when I found out that there was already, say, 6,000 games out there, I thought, that's a lot of games that are already out in the market.
Yes.
And so that takes away from the possibility of reprints. Reprints are trickier. At the same time, a reprint gives you a lot of opportunity to get feedback from people on the game.
And then you mentioned Fantasy Flight. Can I get your take on the Fantasy Flight Asmodee merger?
I think it's a good thing. I think most of what's going to change there is going to be behind-the-scenes infrastructure, shipping to different countries, logistics, and things. If you look at the way Asmodee has treated the other people that they've picked up or work with, all these different companies, like they work with Repost and Matago and Ludonaut and all that, and they treat them fine. And those companies have very distinctive styles, Space Cowboys, and there's so many different companies they work with. So I look at this as a good thing. I'm certainly not worried about them buying. I like how people say, oh, they're buying everybody. They bought two companies.
Yes.
If you've been to Gen Con or Essen, you know that there are hundreds of other companies. And they were small companies that will someday get big.
Now, Tom, you mentioned Gen Con there. That leads me perfectly into my next question. Dice Tower Con 4. It's coming up next year. In fact, it's still, 6 months away. You've already sold out of the adult badges that I can see.
Yeah, it's sold out in a week, actually.
Yeah. So how big can it get, do you think?
Oh, I'm taking it all the way. I'm riding this horse down the gate. No, here's the deal. We are constrained by the hotel at this point with 1,000. Next year, we're moving to a much bigger hotel, and I believe that hotel has an upwards limit of 6,000 at some point. But we're going to go to 1,500 because we only have so many rooms that we can use. Then the year after that, we're going to go to 3,000. And I think we can do it. I really do, for two reasons. One, we have a great location, Orlando, Florida, home of Disney World, Universal Studios, SeaWorld, and a million other little things. And we pick a good time of the year. It's the summer. Most people have off from school, so it's a good time to come. And it's very family-friendly. But another reason, and this has nothing to do with Dice Tower, is I think board gaming is on the rise. Every convention is doing well. I haven't heard of any convention in the past couple of years where they said, oh, we've gone down. And no, they're all going up and up and up and up and up. Board gaming is just exploding. That just makes me happy. I know some people don't want that to happen. They don't want board gaming to go mainstream. They like to keep it for themselves. It's kind of like the people who like music. Oh, I like this music. You've never heard of it. But then everyone listens to it. It dulls it for you. That's never made sense to me.
You're listening to an interview with Tom Vassell of the Dice Tower fame on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is The Dice Men Cometh, and we're going to catch up with the second half of this chat in just a moment during this, our final show for 2014. This is Lemonade with Stepping. Steppin' with Lemonade on The Dice Man Cometh. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent, Mark and Garth, who's AWOL. This week, you catch us in the middle of our feature interview with Tom Vassell, starring the one and only Mark Rickards, who sounds something like this.
Now, you mentioned about Florida. Surely the Dice Tower theme park then is not too far away.
You know, not theme park, but I've walked around dreaming, what would it be like to own a hotel like in Orlando, a themed hotel that was board games? So you would come there and you'd go to Disney World and all that jazz, but at night you would go down to our board game library and play board games with people, and there would be big giant dice. The whole thing would be themed board games. I thought that would be cool. That's on my 30-year project.
All right. I love to hear about snakes and lattes in Toronto. What they've done there is just amazing. And now that game, cafe, game, restaurant model seems to be taking off as well.
The cafe thing is coming in slowly but surely. I know there's at least one in L.A. There's many in Canada. I think Canada has more than the U.S., which is odd, considering disproportionate audiences. I know that I believe there was a bar/game thing opening up in Orlando. Yeah. I'm waiting. I think you'll see them in every major metropolis eventually. It's an in thing to do. It's cool. It's easy. And if they're run professionally, they can be a great success. I think this is the future of the quote unquote friendly local gaming store.
Tom, the burning question that I think every gamer in the world wants to know, at least every male gamer, and probably a lot of female gamers actually, how did you ever convince your wife that you could make a living out of being a professional board game impresario?
Yeah, that is a good question. it was something I thought about for a while, and I do things spur of the moment occasionally, but I often really think about things for a long time. And I thought about this for a good 6 months. It just, the idea came to me and I said, oh, I'm getting a little bit of money from this board gaming, but it's really taking up my time. I'm coming home each day and I'm doing board games, and then I'm doing them all day and all night, and I'm not seeing the kids as much as I want to. So I got to make a choice here. Either I got to cut board gaming down considerably, or take a leap of faith and see if I can, you know, make money on this thing. And I calculated numbers and I said, I think we can scratch by. If not, I can do teaching online. I had an opportunity where I could teach online and make some extra money that way and write articles. And I had a whole list of other sources of income. So I made this whole list of all these different things I could do to supplement board games. But once I went full-time board game, I didn't have time for any of that, and fortunately didn't have to. I also, me and my wife, and I'm very fortunate and blessed with my wife in this regard, we don't need a ton of things. We don't make a lot of money, but we've never needed to make a lot of money.
Yes.
We just wanted to make enough money to survive. Both of our families have had very little money growing up, so we were used to that. So it wasn't that as difficult. But I always tell people that I did it for free for 10 years first.
Yeah, that's right.
And I really think that's the way a lot of things, people get excited. Oh, Vassell did it. I can do it too. Well, you can probably. But I think a lot of times you have to put a lot of effort and a lot of time into something before it pays off.
Yeah, absolutely. And at what stage now, since you started this sort of being professional board gamer, if you like, at what stage did it become apparent that it actually was going to work and that you could survive?
I don't know. I think I was kind of iffy on it, but when we ran the first Kickstarter, that's when I said, okay, this will work. The Kickstarter was way more successful than I had dared hope.
Yes.
I was very pleased with that.
Are there any games that you've seen just released or that you know are coming up that you're really, really excited about as something new and innovative in our hobby?
Well, of games that are just released, there's one from Hobby World that I like quite a bit, Spyfall, where you basically pull a deck of cards from a box and hand them out to everybody. Each person gets one card, and the cards show a location. So, like, one pack of cards will show maybe the grocery store. One pack of cards will show a school. One pack of cards will show the office. And everyone gets a card, but one of the cards says spy. So everyone's looking at their card, and they know where they are. So we all know we're at school. But I don't know that because my card says spy. So then we start asking questions one at a time to other people. Say, what are you wearing today? And I'll be like, I'm wearing a suit, coat, and tie. I don't know where I am. I'm hoping the suit. I hope the location's not the beach. And we're asking questions, and people are asking these questions, trying to figure out who the spy is, because a spy won't be able to answer the questions properly. At the same time, if the spy at any point can figure out where he is based on the questions asked, he can say, oh, I know, we're at the office, and then the spy wins. So players are trying to be subtle in how they ask questions to each other, trying to figure out who the spy is without being too obvious about it. It is fantastic. It is an amazing game.
Sounds great.
That's a game that's out in Russia. It will be picked up by, I don't know who it will be picked up by somebody from America.
Mm-hmm.
There are other, I've really been playing Dice Masters lately. I just played there's so many games. I play games all the time.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the ones that just really get me all excited.
What about ones that you know about that you can't tell us much about? Are there any, though, of those? Not that I'm trying to get your secrets, but are there any that you're like, oh man, I can't wait till this one, I can't tell you about it, but it's just going to blow your mind?
Well, no, there's some that I do know that are coming out, like Spectre Ops from Plaid Hat Games. Very excited about that. It's like Metal Gear, the board game, where one person is sneaking through, trying to blow, you know, to like sabotage or do this mission, and everyone else is hunting him down. He's like in this big warehouse, not warehouse, but like a big area with all these crates and everything. And he's moving around, and the guards are walking around hunting him down with motion sensors and things. Very fun game. I don't often look towards the future as much as people might think. I know about games that are coming out sometimes, but I don't hunt it down. I want it for the news and such. But
yeah.
Other than that, there's so many games that are out right now that catching up with them, hunting down the new stuff is hard. I know a game, the Ancient Terrible Things, is a new game that was kickstarted. Yeah, it's from Pleasant Company Games. But this game is a game in which you think Yahtzee mixed with Cthulhu. In fact, a lot of people are probably going to compare it to Elder Signs.
Yeah.
But it has a bit different, and it has some really lovely, well, maybe lovely is the wrong word, some very nice artwork. It has like an old-time feel Cthulhu to it. I was pretty impressed by it. But, you know, you ask me any given day, I'll give you some games to be impressed about. There's so many. Of course, you know, on the reverse side, there's so many bad ones out there too. So
yes. Well, we here at the Diceman Cometh discovered the joy of being involved with people asking you to review their games. And, of course, the first couple we got sent were I guess you could say we decided not to publish our reviews of those ones for fear we might offend people.
I've gotten over that fear, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you get plenty of those. Because we are on the other end of the world here, is there anything that you'd like to ask us here in the land of creatures that kill people and where people talk funny?
Well, no, I often think when I think about Australia, it's tough to be a gamer there because there's not a lot of local games there. You have Venture Time, Phil Harding and his company is there. And there's a few others, and you have a few conventions that are getting bigger, I believe. You have a PAX down there, don't you?
Yeah, we just had PAX last month. But yeah, that's a huge, and I guess it's a real coup for us having a PAX.
Yeah, well, see, so this is my question. I know that most people in the world don't realize how big America is, but you really have to travel to get somewhere. But I know that Australia is even more so in that regard. It's a very big island, and people are pretty much spread mostly around the edges, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Is it difficult to – I mean, do you have to drive like an hour or two to just get to normal gaming? What do you do in that regard? Are many people kind of out in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, look, I think a lot of people do travel here in Tasmania, we're an island attached to the Big Island. And so we've got the problem that there's this mass of water between us and everyone else. So wherever we go, we have to fly.
And then my other question would be, what do you all eat for snacks when you're gaming? This is important stuff.
Doesn't everyone eat Doritos?
At my table, you get your hand smacked. There's cheese on those things, sir.
Yes. You know, we certainly enjoy a beer with our games, but we certainly make sure it's clear of anywhere on the table where it could get spilled. Tom, I just want to take this opportunity to say thank you so much for making the time. I'm sure you've got a long day ahead of you in your role as a board game impresario. And really excited to hear what's happening with the Dice Tower Empire coming up in 2015.
Yeah, I have some ideas. Things are coming. We have a Kickstarter that will be running in January 2015 with some cool promo cards and stuff. But some ideas for how to make the show better. I always want to make it better. Bigger maybe, but better definitely.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited. I have some cool ideas. You'll see.
Thanks so much for your time tonight, Tom.
Thank you, sir.
Mark, catching up with Tom Vassell on the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. We'll be right back in just a moment with our ideas for what we want for Christmas and a little bit of board gaming news. Coming up in a sec.
That was India by Fair Maidens. Get it, India. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark and Trent. Garth absent this week, but we hope he's having fun playing games with his kids.
I hope he's rained out and just stuck inside playing, hey, that's my penguin again and again and again.
Well, you know, he could have been playing it outside yesterday with the hail and the snow we had here.
Hey, that's my fish. I know it's called that, okay? Stop emailing me. I can feel your emails already.
It's going to be, hey, that's my fist in a minute, isn't it? Now, you've got some news for us.
Yes. Okay, quick bit of board gaming news, and then pretty much we're out of here. Looks to stuff that's sort of cropped up that I'm paying attention to.
Is that what news is?
Yeah, Konami are releasing a new premium gold pack series for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game called Return of the Bling, which is out on the 20th of March. It takes the best cards from other Yu-Gi-Oh! Gold series sets and enshrines them in a gold format. What any of that means is anyone's guess. It sounds important. I don't know. It's a Yu-Gi-Oh! Thing. The kids dig it. Z-Man Games and their parent company, F2Z Entertainment, is launching a brand new imprint called Pretzel Games. Do you know F2Z Games?
No, because Z-Man was taken over by someone else, and I thought it was one of the larger game companies.
It's another one of these mergers that's happened with Philosophia, which is Canadian toy distributor, and it created F2Z Entertainment and F2Z Digital Media.
Oh.
And the digital media arm, they're the guys that make the apps for their own games.
Oh, really?
Like the Pandemic app and stuff like that. Yeah. So the new imprint's called Pretzel Games, and it's exactly that. It's games you can play with a pretzel in one hand, and, well, you play the game one-handed with the other, I assume.
So we talk about beer and pretzel games.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first title's an Old West theme thing called Flick 'em Up.
Right.
And it's full of all these little 3D meeples of cowboys and cacti and stuff. It looks like fun.
Yeah.
The games are shipping in high quality wooden boxes, and they're just meant to be playing with one hand and, you know, very rules light. Sounds like fun.
So add $2 shipping for shipping to Australia, or $200.
For the price of all that timber.
Yeah.
Kickstarters, Conan Hyborian Quests is kickstarting in January, right? So this is going to be starting very soon. This is the game that's got everybody. It's Conan deployed in a sort of descent type format.
Okay, because the big Conan game
was more like Risk.
You couldn't play Conan. It was like Conan was this overlord that you sort of deferred to every now and again, but he really wasn't present in the game.
So you can be Conan one in your loincloth, and there's the addition of a timer in this and a board rather than modular tiles. Don't know quite sort of how it works yet, but everyone's excited about
Sounds interesting.
Because the cover art got released. And these days on Board Game Geek, all you got to do is release a sexy bit of cover art and everybody goes ballistic.
Yeah.
Witness the recent hype around this upcoming game, Scythe. Did you see the art for this one?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Scythe is coming from Stonemaier Games, and that's actually the reason I'm excited, because Stonemaier Games put out Euphoria and pretty much everything they've put out has been really interesting. Scythe, it's like an alternate World War One history thing with steampunk mechs.
Oh yeah, I did see this. Yeah, you're right. It does look fantastic. It looks very much like that. What's the universe where Martin Wallace has just done the game?
Dr. Grodbort stuff. Yeah, Weta Workshop in New Zealand. That kind of steampunk alternate history thing. Except they're calling it Agricola meets Kemet for up to 10 players. So resource management and some area control, I assume.
And minis?
And cardboard standees. Up to 10 players!
Oh, wow.
In late 2015, that one's coming out. Speaking of Kemet, publisher Matago will be putting out a little game called Raptor, a two-player asymmetrical game, which presumably has got dinosaurs in it.
Yeah.
Designed by both Bruno Cathala and Bruno Feduti.
Oh, the Brunos.
Yeah. Bruno Feduti, he's the main brains behind this, and he's actually got a whole list of upcoming titles for 2015. Because we've made this point before, professional board game designers have to put out lots and lots of stuff to make a living. Marvel Dice Masters, new series coming out, surprising no one with this, Avengers, The Age of Ultron.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What a surprise.
In anticipation of the new
film.
Now
all we need is for there to be a new movie.
Yes, the card game's coming out in May. One game that's already out that I've heard almost nothing about, Donald X Vaccarino's thing, Temporum?
This is the time travel one?
From Rio Grande Games. It's out, and like no one's talking about it. It just seems to have fallen completely flat. And
into
just,
a time rift, perhaps.
There's just a global kind of, about it. I'm still really interested, because it looks like it might sort of hit my sweet spot in terms of complexity and playing time and stuff. And one final little bit of board gaming news. Well, this isn't even board gaming news. If you think Amazon is a problem for sucking money out of you, you wait until Google, Facebook, and Twitter add the buy button to their services. That's going to happen. Apparently, Google's looking at this. So instead of searching for an item in Google and then going to Amazon to buy it, you can buy it direct through Google.
Oh.
Well, from a third party through Google, and they facilitate the transaction.
Oh, no, because they already feed you ads based on the things you look at, things you probably want to buy.
Exactly.
Oh, dear. I might as well just hand over my wallet and credit card now.
And it just becomes even easier to spend money in bed.
Oh, no.
That's everything I got, mate. And that pretty much brings us up to the end of the show.
Yeah, well, look, we were going to talk about what we wanted for Christmas. And you know what? I want something for Christmas and you're going to give it to me.
What's that?
What I want is a real old school role-playing session, you know, one of these really old school role playing things that I used to love, and I want to do that with a bunch of people and have some fun. What started me thinking about this was seeing Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective in Shut Up and Sit Down's list of games, and part of the reason they loved it was the newspaper that's in there, the props and stuff. I want old school role playing. Trent, can you give it to me?
For Christmas? Well, for the new year, how about that? I'm planning 2015 for me personally is going to be the year of Call of Cthulhu.
And I
backed that Masters of Nihilathotep.
Oh, baby!
Kickstarter. And in fact, I've got a little Kickstarter present coming from the update of Flashpoint, which hopefully will be arriving any day. So that's us in all our geeky goodness for 2014. Thanks to everybody who's listened to this show, downloaded, or you know, wrote in on our Facebook page and stuff. We'll be back in 2015.
Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and have a beer for Christmas and holidays. Bye!
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.